couple of radio songs to start the hour, The Cause and Radio, and Katie J. Pearson from last year, and Take Back the Radio. I do listen to Lofford Radio, but I suddenly realised I don't actually have a radio set anymore. I listen to it through Bluetooth speaker. It is the way.
Piss the way.
Breaking news from those Georgia Senate runoffs, and Associated Press has announced that Reverend Raphael Warnock has defeated Senator Kenny Loeffler to become the next Democratic US Senator from Georgia. Warnock will become the state's first black senator ever. But in the other one, the other race, apparently, they are closing down counting for tonight in the city of Atlanta in Fulton County. They've closed operations for the night. They're wrapping up and will continue processing ballots at 8:30 local time tomorrow morning. Latest tallies show that John Ossoff, the Democrat, has taken a 3,600 votes lead over David Perdue, the incumbent Republican. That could go to a recount, of course, if it stays that tight. And now, the average adults would only make it to the 8th of January before succumbing to their old favourites if they were attempt veganery, according to a survey. Much of the public admitted they would struggle with the switch because they would struggle to live without cheese, eggs and pancakes. Classics such as roast chicken, fish and chips and bacon sandwiches will also prove too much to resist, according to research of 2,000 people. Cheese topped the list of the 40 items individuals couldn't go without, with 56% admitting they would struggle to stick to a diet where it was off limits. It wouldn't bother you though, would it?
No.
No cheese.
No cheese.
Another one in six couldn't give up pepperoni on a pizza. And nearly a quarter wouldn't want to go without cream. A sausages, a steak or a lasagna would also be hard to skip for those trying a plant-based diet. Despite their love of dairy and other animal produce, 7 in 10 adults agree it's easier than ever to get hold of vegan products. But going vegan doesn't have to mean missing out. Vegan alternatives have come a long way, and a lot of the foods people would miss by going vegan now have really great alternatives that are indistinguishable in terms of taste, including cream and cheese. Not to mention the Greg's vegan sausage rolls and steak bakes. And you can make a lasagna with that soya substitutes and you don't really notice the difference.
Have you tried?
Yeah, I use it a lot.
Really?
Quite often make a spaghetti bolognese using the soya chunks instead of meat. And, well, it doesn't taste like steak, but it doesn't taste too bad. Here's the new one from Taylor Swift, from Evergreen, Willow. Pop quiz time, yes.
Certainly is. On this day in 1973, which Carly Simon track started a 3-week run at number one in the US?
You're So Vain.
Correct, with the backing vocals from?
Mick Jagger. Written about?
Well, debatable.
Warren Beatty,
but only one of the verses, apparently. She said that the other verses were about two other men.
Ooh.
Maybe yourself.
Me? Well, considering I was only 9 at the time, I don't think so.
Question number two. On this day in 1979, the Village People scored their only UK number one single
YMCA.
With which song?
Correct? Not in the Navy.
No, YMCA. And finally, I think I've lost it completely, this British former pop singer, songwriter and music business executive. As a performer in the 1970s, he had UK hits, including Love Me, Love My Dog.
Pete Shelley.
Well done. It's not Love Me, Love My Dog. What was the title of his song, which I heard the other day? And don't ask me why. I've been playing it repeatedly. What was the title of his song, which reached number 4 in the UK charts in the autumn of 1974 when you were 10?
Don't know.
G-Baby.
Do we have that available?
We do. I made sure it's there under G-Baby.
Right. I don't think I've ever heard this before.
Well, you know, you weren't missing much, put it this way.
Well, I was buying pop records at the time, but I don't remember this at all.
You wouldn't have bought this.
Don't know what I bought.
Your face. It's a picture, as they say.
Buying Barry Blue records, I think.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You all right today?
Very good, thank you.
You'll be looking forward to 5:30 this afternoon, won't you, honestly?
Why?
Hey? Bosses of biggest companies will earn more in the first 3 days of this week than the average worker's annual wage. By 17:30 GMT this afternoon, the pay of chiefs will have overtaken the £31,461 annual median wage for full-time workers.
If only. I'm at the coalface every day chipping away while those above us carry on.
It's time to hand some of it back, isn't it? You know, Rishi Sunak's got you in his size.
Well, given the cost of the pandemic, there's no doubt we are talking about fiscal constraints. And that debate certainly get louder, I think, as the year goes on. I don't think it's a debate that we'll be hearing too much about in the first 6 months of this year as they try to assure the recovery. Beyond that, it's going to be important, though, the UK Chancellor yesterday making available another £4.6 billion of emergency aid. This is to help companies cope with tighter restrictions that see schools and non-essential shops closed until at least the middle of February. Treasury estimates the money will boost 600,000 businesses, includes a grant of £9,000 for retail, hospitality and leisure businesses that have been forced to close. Remember, the furlough programme and money for self-employed will continue through, I think, to the end of April. The loan programme closes to new entrances at the end of March. The latest measures add to the £280 billion it's cost the UK Treasury to tackle the virus and support firms and workers through the pandemic. Unmatched rise in peacetime borrowing. UK debt has surged to around about 100% of GDP. And as you say, no doubt, the nation's finances will need to be put back onto a sustainable path at some point.
This would be music to the ears of John Maynard Keynes, wouldn't it?
Potentially. He'll be, I don't know if he envisaged such a crisis playing out, but clearly it plays right into that arc.
OK, who's going to pay it back?
You. Well, the country, the nation, everyone, to be honest with you.
Mansion tax.
Wealth tax coming through at some point, one would suspect. Lots of different things being muted, but as I say, not something that we'll see probably really come into force during the course of this year.
That's dangerous ground for a Tory government, isn't it?
Potentially so, and you know they would they don't like to raise taxes, and the electoral cycle, of course, will come into play at some point on that. Although we're some way off the next election, no doubt politicians will be thinking about that.
Okay, let's move on to Georgia and the markets in particular. I mean, S&P futures down this morning. Signs are that the Democrats are going to win both those seats. So one of them's already been called. They've stopped counting the other one for the night. But the markets won't like that because it means increased regulation if Democrats gain control of the House.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Certainly, investors have been monitoring a number of things, COVID figures, OPEC Plus meeting, but also the US Senate runoff election in Georgia. Democrat Warnock has apparently won the Senate race there. Well, that's according to ABC and NBC this morning. As you say, the other seat looking very tight. Potentially, that blue wave will actually emerge that will see the Democrats control Congress. What would that mean? Well, I suppose you could be talking about more aggressive tax hikes. You could be talking about increased regulatory pressure on technology companies and a larger stimulus package as well. The market potentially could be wary of that because it may lead to upward pressure on inflation and potentially higher interest rates, of course, along with those higher taxes we've been talking about to pay for the fiscal aid. So markets monitoring that situation so far. Hard actually to gauge what it means because a more aggressive stimulus package, at least in the short term, would be positive for the US economy and for companies. So if you look at markets, saw the S&P 500 up 0.7% at the close yesterday. NASDAQ was up 1%. European equities futures have got stronger as the morning's gone on, actually. Now calling the FTSE up 62 points. Stacked over in Frankfurt up 36 points. CAC in Paris up 107 points. And actually, the economic data was pretty good from the US. We should mention that yesterday. ISM survey showed US manufacturing activity rose to its highest level in 2.5 years in December. Remember, manufacturing accounts about 12% of the US economy. Seeing strong demand for goods, particularly as services struggle with the lockdown. So you're seeing strong demand for electronics, for home improvement products and for exercise equipment.
Not for cars, though. UK car sales down 29% last year.
Yeah, no real surprise of that. The disruption that we've been seeing as a result of the pandemic. Showrooms have been closed for considerable periods of time over the course of the past year. Alongside that, people are not commuting into work. So the need for a car perhaps has been reduced as many people have worked from home. So truly a dismal year for the UK car industry and something that we've seen, of course, in other markets around the world.
There's going to be some bargains out there, isn't there? You know, I can feel a few bargains coming along.
You like the idea of that, don't you? You're in the market for a new little vehicle?
Well, no, but I mean, I keep thinking to myself, they've got to get rid of the stock, so they're going to have to start giving them away at some point.
Well, you should also remember production levels have also been impeded by the pandemic as well. So you'd normally expect that level of demand decrease to result in a huge amount of stock. But actually, I think factories were closed for considerable periods. There's also been disruption to supply chain. So your theory that there's a huge amount of cars out there that's going to be sold off very cheap may not exactly be true.
Guy, you always have to rain on my parade, don't you?
Well,
really?
I'm sorry.
Just because you've earned more money this year so far than the average worker does in a year.
Come on, you're really pushing this now.
Okay, let's have a look at OPEC Plus and the resulting effects on the price of oil, which has been ticking up over the last few days.
It has. OPEC Plus reached an agreement to curb supply next month, with Saudi Arabia carrying a greater burden of the oil output cuts. In fact, most of it, the kingdom will make an extra 1 million barrel per day cut, with most holding steady. Russia and actually Kazakhstan will be allowed to boost output in February by a combined 75,000 barrels per day, which is actually a relatively small increase for two of the largest non-OPEC producers in the alliance. The proposal does mean that the global market will get less supply in February than most traders have been predicting. Markets have been reacting to that. Crude prices jumped 5%, trading at the highest level in 10 months. Brent trading above $53 a barrel this morning.
Okay, can we have a quick word about the euro? I've just finished reading a fascinating book by Stephen Wall, who is advisor to several British prime ministers and also a top diplomat in the EU, called Reluctant European, which sort of traces Britain's history in the European back to when Edward Heath took us in 1973.
That's a statement of a book, I'd say, Reluctant European.
Yeah, it's a very, very good book, actually. It's well worth a read. But is the jury still out on the euro? Because, of course, successive British governments sort of failed to sign up for the single currency, even though Tony Blair got quite close at one point. But, you know, what after 20 years is the future of the euro, do you think?
Well, you could argue, actually, the pandemic has, if anything, strengthened the European project. The most important element of that has been the European Recovery Fund, which has been agreed and, for the first time, mutualises debt. So what we've seen, of course, is monetary union without fiscal union in the past, and that has been one of the key weaknesses of the single currency. The fact that we've started to move towards that reduces the fragmentation risk, I think, within the eurozone and creates a stronger collective body. So you could argue, actually, the pandemic has encouraged the European governments to work in a more cooperative fashion, and that, if anything, has been positive for the European project. Now, what does that mean in terms of the euro? Well, the recovery in the eurozone, I think, is likely to remain very weak. You've got negative interest rates, of course, in the eurozone. They're likely to stay there for a considerable period of time. So you talk about negative interest rates, a weaker recovery doesn't suggest that it's going to be a good year for the euro.
This is still the problem, isn't it? You know, you've got different economies working at different speeds, and harmonising interest rates across the eurozone is not the easiest thing to do.
It was always going to be a fundamental problem. The question is, does the benefits outweigh the potential weaknesses of that? And you could also argue that, certain countries, Germany, for example, have had a much lower interest rate than was probably deserved, and have they benefited from that potentially? But you can also argue that European countries have been able to borrow money and so forth as being part of Europe, and that's helped demand within Europe across the board that wouldn't have been there without the guarantees of the European project.
One of the fascinating things in Stephen Wall's book was the complete animosity between Tony Blair and Gordon Brown. I mean, Blair used to send notes to the Treasury and they didn't reply.
Yes, it was one of the more fractious relationships at the top of government that's been I don't think it's been fully unveiled yet. I think we sort of hear snippets over time that really cast a light exactly how dark it was during some of those fractious meetings.
I think Blair, as I said, was very keen to sort of get into the single currency, but so Gordon Brown basically put it up against the buffers and said no.
But it probably turned out to be the right move if you see where the UK is today.
Well, the referendum never would have happened if Britain had actually been in the single currency, would it?
Certainly not, one would suspect. But, I mean, it would have taken a lot to get us to that point, it has to be.
The five tests of economic convergence.
Yes. We were a long way from that, weren't we, on many of those?
All right, foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 1.36, euro dollar coming in at 1.23. Going to get €1.10.5 for your British pound this morning.
Right, enjoy spending all your loot.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Speak to you tomorrow. Hank Potts and Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyser has the top stories across the Riviera.
30 new cases of COVID-19 have been identified in Monaco on Tuesday, bringing the total number of residents affected to 947 since the beginning of the pandemic. 20 people are currently hospitalised and 108 people are being followed by the Home Monitoring Centre. 763 people have recovered from COVID in the principality. The health situation in Monaco over the past few days shows an active circulation of the virus. As the Christmas holidays come to an end, the number of people testing positive is on the rise. To limit the movement of people in the principality, the government recommends working from home in both the private and public sectors until further notice, along with the closure of all sports halls and swimming pools, as well as a more general ban on the practice of sport in a closed environment, including school sporting activities, for at least 3 weeks until January the 27th. Meanwhile, during a press conference on Tuesday, Philippe de Mestre, the Director General of the Regional Health Agency for the Provence-Alpes-Côte d'Azur region, has stressed the importance of the deployment of vaccination centres in order to quickly achieve collective immunity in the region. In the PACA region, the first phase of vaccination targets nearly 600 collective accommodation establishments, including nursing homes and long-term care units, which represents around 40,000 people. These are people deemed most directly exposed, since a third of the deaths linked to COVID-19 in France are residents from these establishments. Also considered a priority at the start of the campaign are healthcare professionals over 50. And since Tuesday, two additional targets have been added to the first phase of vaccination, firefighters and home care helpers. Vaccinations have started in Nice and Marseille, and centres will be set up within a week in Grasse, Cannes, Antibes, Menton and Roquebillière. Deliveries of the vaccination are announced for today in the Alpes de Haute-Provence, the Haute-Alpes and Vaucluse region. Vaccination should start tomorrow in Avignon. By the end of next week, other centres will also open in Carpentras and Cavaillon. A network of vaccination centres will gradually be deployed throughout the region. They should start within a week, according to the director of the Regional Health Agency, upon receipt of the current vaccines. France's education minister has not ruled out the possibility of extending the school holidays in February. Speaking on French radio on Tuesday, Jean-Michel Blanquer said that all possibilities were being considered in the fight against the spread of COVID. Zone B, which includes the Academy of Aix-Marseille and Nice, are due to break up on February the 20th until March the 8th. Ski resorts could remain closed despite a planned reopening from Thursday. 20,000 new cases of COVID were reported in France on Tuesday, as the government plans to hold a Defence Council meeting this morning to take stock of the health situation, with further announcements expected from the Prime Minister tomorrow, Thursday, January the 7th. The announcement that France's former health minister Agnès Buzyn is to join the World Health Organization has caused a wave of criticism from the opposition. The 58-year-old doctor, specialist in leukemia and bone marrow transplants, entered politics and the French government in May 2017 after the victory of Emmanuel Macron. She left her post as Minister of Health in February 2020 at the start of the coronavirus epidemic. The $47 million bonus, which has been promised to the CEO of General Electric, has been considered as scandalous by French workers. General Electric announced in the spring a plan to save $2 billion by cutting 13,000 jobs, with two sites in France being particularly affected. During a press conference on Tuesday, unions and elected officials from the two cities affected by the job cuts within the American group called it totally scandalous. A 19-year-old has been injured following a shooting in the Moulin district of Nice. The shooting occurred shortly after 1 p.m. on Tuesday. One other individual has been placed in police custody. The district has witnessed several shootings in the past. The last one to date was on December the 26th. An investigation has been opened to determine the reason behind the shooting. The police of the Alpes de Haute-Provence have launched an appeal for any witnesses following the worrying disappearance of a 95-year-old man from La Roquette-sur-Var. The man living in La Roquette-sur-Var left his home on Sunday in his white Peugeot 108 and has not been seen since. Anyone with any information is asked to contact the police. For the numbers, you can go to rivieradio.mc. Traffic has been disrupted on the Promenade des Anglais after a crash occurred involving two vehicles on Tuesday afternoon, shortly after 3 p.m. Emergency services treated one person on site, and the cause of the collision is still to be determined. Finally, the resort of Gréolières-les-Neiges has enjoyed significant snowfall over the last few days, with a record 1.5 metres covering the hills. The current cold spell in the region is expected to last a few more days, with temperatures below normal for the season.
Riviera Radio, Sports News.
Football: Spurs are through to the League Cup final in England following a 2-0 win over Brentford. Here's more from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello, I'm Paul Serres at the BBC Sports Centre. Tottenham are into the final of the League Cup after a 2-0 victory over Championship side Brentford. Moussa Sissoko and Son Heung-min got the goals for Spurs, who are 90 minutes away from their first trophy in 12 years. They will face either Manchester City or Manchester United in the final at Wembley in April. Here's the Spurs defender, Eric Dier.
Really difficult game against a very, very good side in Brentford. I think people can be confused sometimes between the difference in league, but I think they're just as good as a lot of sides in the Premier League, so we knew it was going to be a very difficult game and we were ready from the start, and we got the win and we're really happy to be in the final.
The Manchester Derby semi-final will take place on Wednesday. For the United manager, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, it's a fourth successive semi-final, but he's yet to win one. United went out to City in the final four of the competition last season before losing in the semis of the FA Cup and the Europa League. Solskjaer says United are a better team now.
I think we've improved immensely in a year since last semi, even since when we were in Europe in August. So for me, it's a step closer to get to the final. We've developed a lot. It's easy to say, have we learnt? But it's not about learnt. It's about some fine margins in those finals or semi-finals as well.
The Premier League says 40 players and club staff have tested positive for coronavirus over the past week, more than double the previous weekly high. It comes after there were a number of apparent coronavirus breaches by players over Christmas and the New Year. With more details, John Bennett.
After previously testing once a week, the Premier League conducted 2,295 tests across two rounds over the past week. Between the 28th and the 31st, there were 28 new positive tests and 12 more found between the 1st and 3rd of January. The previous high was 18 positive results. But the Premier League are insisting they still have confidence in their protocols due to what they call the low numbers of positive tests across the overwhelming majority of clubs. And they say, fully backed by the government, fixtures will continue to be played as scheduled.
And for more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
So I find it hard to believe that they can carry on playing football when the whole of England's been put into lockdown.
Yeah, it looks, when you see that rugby game as well, yeah, in France, the French that went to, was it Leicester?
There's also, I mean, they're still hugging and kissing each other when they score goals, and there's a lot of spitting going on as well, which is just, yeah it's bad at any time, but especially in the current climate. The former England and Manchester City star Colin Bell has died following a short illness at the age of 74. The midfielder made 501 appearances for City between 1966 and 1979, scoring 153 goals. He played 48 times for England. In 2004, Manchester City fans voted to name one of the stands at the Etihad Stadium in Bell's honour. A statement by the club said that he would always be remembered as one of Manchester City's best ever players. He really was a great player. Cricket: the England touring party have been retested for coronavirus in Sri Lanka after all-rounder Moeen Ali returned a positive test on Monday. England are hoping to start training today ahead of the first test, which starts next week. Moeen is self-isolating, as is Chris Wokes, who's been deemed a close contact. South Africa have thrashed Sri Lanka by 10 wickets inside 3 days in the second test in Johannesburg. The tourists were dismissed for 211 in their second innings, leaving the hosts needing just 67 to win. South Africa win the series 2-0. New Zealand have beaten Pakistan by an innings and 176 runs in the second test in Christchurch. The hosts only needed to bat once and made a massive 659 for 6, declared before dismissing the tourists for 186 in their second innings on day 4 to win the series 2-0. And they go to the top of the ICC test rankings as well. Formula One: Williams has used Mercedes gearboxes from 2022 after agreeing to expand technical collaboration with the German team. Williams have been using Mercedes engines since 2014, and the new partnership will also see them use related hydraulic components from next season. And in rugby union, the Lions series against South Africa could be staged in the UK and Ireland if COVID-19 prevents fans from travelling. The idea is among contingency plans being discussed by the Lions board if the trip to South Africa has to be cancelled. The South Africa Rugby Union has made it clear that a tour without visiting fans would not be commercially viable. Here's the marine weather forecast for coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Alamara Sea in the VAR. The general situation is a depression 1,006 millibars over the Gulf of Genoa. Winds are westerly, force 3 to 5, locally force 6. The sea is moderate, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,006 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, cloudy, force 1 to 3, variable winds, calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are southwesterly, force 4 to 6. The sea is moderate, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,005 millibars. And the outlook for Thursday, cloudy, force 3 to 5 westerly winds, slight to moderate seas, and good visibility.
Riviera Radio, weather.
A bright sunshine forecast today, but not very warm. Moderate westerly winds, a high of 10 degrees. Overnight lows 3 degrees on the coast, minus 2 degrees inland with the widespread frost and clear skies. Thursday and Friday, cloudy tomorrow, partially cloudy on Friday. Highs of 7 to 9 degrees. Finally.
Finally, you in charge of pocket money duty, if any of your children have pocket money?
We don't have pocket money per se. We have money which is given for tasks carried out.
Such as cleaning the car,
yeah,
washing the car. Okay, well, mothers apparently are more likely to be asked for financial advice from their offspring than fathers, according to a recent survey. And about 1 in 12 offspring would seek money guidance from their mum, while only 1 in 14 would turn to their dad. People living in Yorkshire are the most likely to seek financial advice from their mother. The poll of 2,000 people across Britain found with 12% saying they would. They were followed by the West Midlands and Scotland. Women are more likely to ask for tips on money than men, according to the findings. However, 42% of women said they would not ask anyone, compared with 47% of men.
I bought a book for Christmas, Money for Teenagers.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. How to open a bank account, etc., etc. So I gave her a little cheque.